This podcast is one of the many good ones on the Self Defense Radio Network.
Hi, this is Jeff in Sachse, Texas. And just like Bob, I'm a tactical guy, and I like a tactical podcast.
Jeff, wait a minute. That's practical guy and practical podcast.
Oh, never mind.
And welcome to episode 447 of the Handgun World Podcast. I'm your host, Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Well, this week, Dr. Bill from the Firearms Chat podcast, he sent me a good 30-minute audio submission. You know, it was supposed to be used while I was on break and on my podcast vacation. I had so many good submissions that it carried me through my vacation, and I still have good ones for you to listen to. Two more are coming up in the next two episodes that I think you're going to really enjoy. So Dr. Bill will be coming on here towards the end of this episode. I want to start with a voicemail that a listener called in. Hey, by the way, if you've got a comment or a question, I would love to hear from you. The voicemail number is 210-646-1727, 210-646-1727. Let's listen.
Hey, Bob, this is Steve from Maine calling. Hey, I wanted to thank you for what you do and just make a quick comment on something that I think is worth looking into. I do a lot of training myself and work with a couple of police officers that are good family friends. And I was at the range one day, and it kind of dawned on me that with my little ones, I'm always carrying them when I go into stores. I mean, I got a one-year-old, and I was doing the same with my other two kids. And it kind of hit me, you know, nobody's training really teaches us what to do when we're carrying a child and carrying a gun if we needed to use it. So one thing that I do now, and I work with people on, and the officers that I've shown them, they work with their officers because they can run into it as well, is we use 20-pound sandbags in our offhand, and we draw our firearm and engage the target just the same as any other training event, but we use the sandbag to replicate if we're holding a child. So just wanted to share that, and again, thanks for what you do, and you're welcome to share this on your podcast if you'd like, and thanks. Bye.
Steve, that was a great voicemail. Thank you. This is something that not enough people practice. People don't think about that. What if you have to hold your child, or what if you're trying to get your child or another loved one out of the way while you're having to defend yourself? Do you practice one-handed shooting? Because in a situation like Steve just talked about, you're going to be shooting one-handed. And you might be shooting with your right hand, you might be shooting with your left hand. Do you practice both? I kind of laugh in some competition matches, IDPA matches sometimes, when we have to shoot a stage either partially or completely with one hand. Oh, you should hear the complaints. Oh, I can't believe we have to do this. Or I've heard people say, I never practiced this. My time is going to be terrible. You know, they never practice it? Wow. What's up with that? Why don't they practice that? It's something that you gotta put that into your practice and training regimen, because it's quite likely, actually, that if you have to draw your gun, you're going to be shooting one-handed. And maybe you have something of significant weight, as Steve pointed out, like maybe a child or something else that you're carrying. Or maybe it's some other adult that you have to use your other hand, maybe to push them away or to reposition them quickly. And you have to be able to do all that in split seconds, move them out of the way, and shoot and defend yourself, shooting your handgun one-handed. So, good point, Steve. Good voicemail. Thank you for calling that in. Okay, let me remind you that this show is sponsored by Concealment Solutions. You're going to hear about a competition match that I shot. It's coming up real soon. I'm going to give you all my commentary. And I used my concealment solutions outside the waistband, Cobra, all Kydex holster. It's pretty much the way I roll these days, folks. I love outside the waistband carry, especially with these highly concealable outside the waist holsters. They're so comfortable and they're fast because they're all Kydex. Check out concealmentsolutions.com, concealmentsolutions.com, and use the coupon code HandgunWorld to get 10% off your order at checkout. So, I recently shot a competition match. Actually, I'm recording this on July 20th, Saturday. This morning is when I shot the match. Here's some pre-match commentary from the shooting range. Well, it's kind of a misty Saturday morning in San Antonio, Texas, and I'm at Lone Star Handgun Range getting ready for AASA competition. And this is a competition club I've talked about before on the show. It's kind of a local club, mostly South Texas. And what's really cool about this is that this is the kind of competition match where they allow me and all the other competitors to load our magazines to full capacity and basically compete like we're really going to carry. There are separate divisions like stock auto and open auto and single stack. And so I'm going to be shooting my M&P 9 2.0 Compact. As you know, I've mentioned before in previous episodes, most of this year I'm going to shoot my two new M&Ps, my 2.0 Compact and my 2.0 Shield. So I'm going to be competing with that today, and I'm going to be in the stock auto division. I'll be able to load my magazines to full 15-round capacity, plus one in the chamber, which is how I carry. We got a little bit of rain last night. The range is not real slippery, but it is wet. But this range here at Lone Star Handgun, just outside of San Antonio, is pretty well equipped to handle the rain. This is the first time I've actually shot a competition match out here. Ben Branham and I have taught some classes out here, and we've come out here just to do some general shooting. This is going to be the first time competing. I'm looking forward to it. Really looking forward to running this M&P 9C. I did a YouTube video on my first shots with the M&P 9 2.0 Compact. I shouldn't say M&P 9C. That's not correct. M&P 2.0 9mm. Compact. Check out my YouTube channel, Handgun World, on YouTube. You will see, and it's also on my Facebook page, Handgun World Podcast Facebook page, my first shots. I'm going to try to get some good videos of me shooting this in competition. I'm really liking how this gun shoots. It's a very smooth gun. It's just as accurate as any Glock that I own. Or let's just put it this way. I can be just as accurate with it as any Glock that I own. And I am seriously thinking about switching to the M&P platform. What you're hearing in the background is a license to carry class. They're conducting one here. Looks like there's about 40 or 50 people over there doing the shooting portion of the Texas license to carry. I'm really glad to see so many people coming out getting their license. A lot of women in that group. That's good to see as well. I just wish that those people would try to get some more training or competition experience after they get their license to carry. You know, as Carl Wren said, usually about 1% or less actually go beyond their license to carry class, which is unfortunate. But hopefully me through my podcast and you as a listener and going to classes and things, hopefully we can spread the word. So have you done that lately? Have you spread the word about training or competition? That's a challenge that I have for you. Have you spread the word about training or competition? A lot of times just word of mouth, when people hear from you how much fun that they had and everything, that goes a long way, and it helps to convince them to participate. Something else I wanted to say about this competition match that I'm participating in. I've come here dressed like I normally dress. This is the way that I like to come to competition matches. You know, I'm just wearing blue jeans. I'm wearing an untucked button-down shirt and a light raincoat over my button-down shirt because we got a little bit of a mist going on. It's going to be harder for me to draw than it is for the gamers. Some of the people here, some of the gamers here are in their jersey and they're open carrying and, you know, they've got their offset gaming holster and all that. That's fine and dandy. There's nothing wrong with playing the game. I treat competition as a way to practice my concealed carry skills and to practice what I have to do if I have to use my gun in real life to defend myself. And I personally think that's the greatest challenge. I mean, playing the game is fun. It's a challenge. Yes. I think if you play the game long enough, you'll probably get to a point to where maybe you might hit a plateau or get stagnant. And, you know, I hope that doesn't happen to you, but it happens to a lot of people. And then they get bored or they quit because, you know, because they're not winning every time. And so what keeps me motivated to come out here is I know that I'm not here to win the match. If I place well, that's fine. You know, the last time I did this, I came out here not to win the match. I went to an IDPA competition nearby. I participated in stock service pistol, and I think I was 10th out of 28 shooters, 10th or 11th. So, you know, not trying to win the game, I was still 10th or 11th out of 29, 28 shooters, something like that. But I am drawing from concealment today, and I'm wearing a horizontal mag pouch carrier. That's how I carry in real life. For me, it's actually faster than carrying my spare mag behind my left hip. That it's faster for me to carry it towards the belt buckle in front of me, kind of on the left side, just barely left of my belt buckle. I'm a right-handed shooter, so When the buzzer goes off, I'm going to have to clear my raincoat, and I'm going to have to clear my untucked shirt to get to my pistol. That's going to be an interesting challenge, but I want to practice that, right? I mean, if something happens to me on the drive home and I have to defend myself, or let's say I get out of my truck and I go into a store or grab some coffee somewhere and I got to defend myself, this is how I am going to be dressed and it's how I am going to be at that time. And so that's how I want to practice today. I think we have 5 stages, which means we're probably going to shoot somewhere between about 80 and 100 rounds. Folks, if you don't compete, let me tell you, you can't have much more fun for $25. That was my entrance fee to get into this competition, $25. That's the way most competition clubs are, $25, $30, $35 if you're not a member. You get a discount if you are a member. There are benefits for signing up and getting memberships. I'm going to renew. I think I'm going to go ahead and sign up for AASA since they have so many matches locally. And I'm going to renew my IDPA membership and try to get classified in IDPA once again. My last classification was an IDPA sharpshooter in stock service pistol. That was like 5 or 6 years ago. I actually think I can do better than stock service pistol if I practice. I mean, better than sharpshooter if I practice. So that's my goal, is to practice and see if I can get up to IDPA expert, probably in the CCP division, concealed carry pistol. And I'll shoot either this M&P 2.09 compact. Man, that's a lot to say, you know. M&P 2.09 millimeter compact. Anyway, when I start to qualify in competition, I'm going to qualify with this gun, and I'm also going to qualify with my Glock 19. So that will kind of, I'd like to do both with that, especially for qualification. Okay, those are my initial pre-match comments right now, and maybe during the match and after the match, I'll have a little bit more for you. Okay, back in the mobile studio, finished up with the match. Wow, I sure love the M&P compact, M&P 2.0 compact. Real nice gun, ran flawlessly. I can shoot it, like I mentioned before, as accurately as the Glock 19. I just put a Facebook post on my Facebook page. The first stage, I was shooting a couple of steel plate racks. Gun ran just great and perfectly good accuracy for me, because I certainly can't outshoot this gun. There's a very good chance that this M&P 2.0 compact might be my primary carry gun. Anyway, good stages, a lot of good movement on the stages that we shot, and I like the fact that we can reload whenever we want, we can load our magazines to whatever capacity that we want, and we can wear our holster anywhere that we want, we can wear our mag pouches anywhere that we want. So it's great practice for civilian concealed carry shooting, AASA, American Action Shooting Association. I wish that they were more popular nationwide and that they were everywhere. Ted Bonnet has been on this. I've interviewed him a couple of years ago, and he's been on this podcast. I was going to try to get him in for an interview before I left, but I think he was already gone or doing something and I missed it. I'll try to catch him next time. I used a Concealment Solutions Cobra outside the waistband holster, which is 95% of the time what I carry. I brought my Smith & Wesson 2.0 Shield as a backup, but didn't have to use it. That was in case mine went down. Oh, hey, something about, I want to tell you, I saw a Glock blow up on the range today. Another shooter was shooting a Glock 17, and he was shooting his own reloads, and apparently had one round that was double charged or had too much powder or whatever, and he blew up his Glock. Check my Facebook page. I got pictures of it, of the frame, all blown up and in pieces and things like that, and you'll check it. You can check that out looking at my Facebook page. That stuff happens, folks. It happens when if you shoot reloads. If you shoot enough and you reload, that's probably going to happen. And, you know, he was frustrated with himself because he said, wow, he says, I'm real anal about making sure I got everything loaded correctly. Hey, that's Murphy's Law. It happens. That's just what happens. Human error gets in there. So I personally think that's one of the reasons why I shoot factory ammo. I don't reload because 95% of what I shoot is 9mm, and 9mm is so cheap right now, and I got such little time anyway, I don't really have the time to reload. I really don't. It probably wouldn't save me much money because I would just shoot more because I'd have more ammo available, and even if it did save me a little bit of money, my time is probably worth more money than the small amount of money that reloading 9mm would save me, if that makes any sense. So I just shoot factory ammo. I shot CCI Blazer Brass 115 grain 9mm for this competition, and it was just fine. The M&P 2.0 compact's a real soft recoiling gun, and I said that I would do some more review of it once I had a chance to get it out and shoot it a bunch at competition matches and in a class. So this was the first competition match that I shot with it. If you don't shoot some sort of competition shooting, IDPA, USPSA, IPSC, even shotgun competition, whatever, can I strongly urge you to go out and do it? My cost today was $25 for the match, and I shot about 2 boxes of ammunition. And wow, did I get some good practice? Did I have a lot of fun? For $25 and 2 boxes of ammunition? And I was able to do things I can't do at a regular shooting range? So that's, I really think, you know, even if you have to drive somewhere or you got to make some special time in your day. I showed up here at 9 o'clock this morning and it's 12:44 and I'm going home. So it didn't take up too much time. Took up 3 hours and 44 minutes. And it was a lot of fun and a lot of decent practice. Especially drawing from a holster, putting rounds on target quickly, and doing it safely. Some of the major benefits of competition. Okay, next up, from the Firearms Chat
podcast, Dr. Bill Chakas. I hope I pronounced that right, Bill. Dr. Bill from the Firearms Chat podcast, a member of the Self-Defense Radio Network. This is a guest host submission. I got so many of these, and they're all great, folks. I got two more to submit after, or to let you listen to after this one. Two more guest host submissions that I was supposed to play while I was in break, but I had enough to cover my entire break. I'm back now. Obviously, I'm not on break. But I'm going to use these anyway. And as I mentioned, February 1st, this show is switching to a twice-a-month show, the 1st and the 15th of every month. So here's Dr. Bill from the Firearms Chat podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Handgun World podcast. I am not Bob Main. I am Dr. Bill Chakas. I was a tactical guy, but I'm retired now. I served 12 years in the United States Army, and then while a civilian, I spent over 25 years as an educator, mostly as an assistant dean and vocational and academic teacher in a special ed high school, but I also taught for 13 years at the college level teaching ROTC. While also a civilian, I was a sworn auxiliary LEO in two states. I host and produce the Firearms Chat podcast, another great podcast here on the Self-Defense Radio Network. Let me say that one more time for special effect. The Self-Defense Radio Network. That's my little trademark. So you might hear that promo on some of the other shows on the network. A little about me as far as podcasting. I started doing a football podcast in 2004 and began doing Second Amendment, self-defense, and shooting sports podcasting in the late summer of 2013. Our show bounced around between a few different forum websites, but for the last year and 3+ months, we have been on our own. I grew up around firearms because my dad and four of my uncles, his brother and three of his brother-in-laws, were all in law enforcement. So recreational shooting was a family thing. One of my uncles in the NYPD was also co-owner of a gun shop that started in the Bronx's Little Italy and moved north of the city to Yonkers, where my late uncle's partner's sons still own it today. A little under 6 years ago, my wife and I made a life-changing move. We left Long Island, New York for Northern Arizona. And our second life-changing move, a few months later, we adopted a rescue therapy dog, an 80-pound old English bulldog who recently turned 7, named Sergeant Gator. But enough about me. I'm here today to talk to you about compact and subcompact semi-auto pistols. So we're going to talk first about two of the ones that I own, the Ruger LC9S and the Smith & Wesson M&P Shield. So first we'll talk about my Ruger, which I originally carried the LC9, the original model. After about 4,000 rounds, the magazine release began releasing too much or not releasing at all. So with an exchange via Davidson's, I now have the 9S, which has about 1,500 plus rounds through it since I got it about 2 years ago. It's my deep conceal everyday carry gun. And I would carry the Smith & Wesson M&P Shield a little more if I found a reliable holster. I'm still using the MD1, the sticky MD1 pocket holsters on both guns. With the Shield, I have the Performance Center ported version. But there's a new version with a Crimson Trace laser built into the lower frame integrally. And that is out now. You can get that from the Smith & Wesson Performance Center shop right now. I believe the MSRP is $599. I remember the MSRP was $529 on mine without the laser, and now it's a little less expensive. You could pick it up for under $500. The Ruger, I added an external Laser Max laser and green laser and light combo. And I really, really enjoy carrying and shooting. Actually, it's hard to say that you could enjoy shooting a small gun, but I enjoy shooting that gun almost as much as I enjoy shooting some snub-nosed revolvers. But we're not talking about those today. The LC9S, I usually carry Critical Defense and sometimes Critical Defense Light or a Fiocchi Monoblock. Or the Dynamic Research Technologies Frangible. And there are a few others. Of course, the Federal Personal Defense HST rounds are always a favorite of mine in both of those guns. I really enjoy talking about, as well as shooting, the smaller guns. I don't know what it is. Call me crazy. I like the large double stacks also in 1911s, but as far as personal defense carry, the smaller guns have it made. They have it beat, especially when you have to be in a non-permissive environment. And sometimes we realize that that happens more often than not. They basically both have the same capacity, the Shield either 7 or 8 rounds, the Ruger either 7 or 9 rounds in the magazine. So I feel that if you have to draw your gun and engage, if you need more than 8 rounds plus a spare mag, then I wouldn't say you're doing something wrong, but you should be getting out of there and getting help in the form of law enforcement. If you are law enforcement, then obviously you have to stay engaged in the fight. But civilians have no duty to continue to engage a perpetrator of any sort unless you're in an active shooter situation and you're trying to put the active shooter down to help yourself and help your chances of survival, your friends and family, their chances of survival. Otherwise, you don't need to engage an active shooter. Stay down, get away from the scene, and stay down. But getting back to the various subcompact and compact semi-auto pistols, I really prefer the full-size 9mm Parabellum 9x19 as opposed to the 380 or the 9mm short. Not that I can't carry one. I have a Bursa Thunder Plus. It's just about the same size as the Shield and the Ruger LC9S. The difference is it carries 15 rounds of 380. So you've got a miniature double stack, basically. It's a 3.4-inch barrel. It looks a lot like a Walther PPK on steroids. These days, you can't really get a PPK in 380 anyway. They sell them in 22 LR, 10 shot. Very hard to actuate that slide unless you've got really, really good hands. And I'm one of these guys. I have good, strong hands, but they don't work as well. They don't have the same feel anymore because of diabetic neuropathy and a broken back. And I will talk a little later about a firearm for people who have hand issues. And I am very, very lucky that I get to shoot that gun once in a while because it belongs to my wife. But what I like about the LC9S, whether you get the standard or the pro model without the safety, I prefer the model with the safety. It's just ingrained in me that when I draw the gun, I'm going to sweep my thumb across the safety and get it off, get it disengaged while I'm bringing the gun into target acquisition. There are a lot of people that, you know, they prefer guns with no safeties, whether they be Glocks or something else. That's not me. I'm not a Glock person. They don't fit my hand right. Every time I've tried them, they just don't work. And I know Bob's going to get a lot of hate mail because of me, because I said that, because I know a lot of you Glockophiles listen to this show. I have nothing against people who shoot, own, and carry Glocks. It's just not for me. So please understand that you know, once in a while I lovingly joust with my podcast partner, Greg Hutton, who does carry a Glock every day. And his reason is if he has to engage and then he has to obviously stay on the scene, when the officer asks him to take the gun out of his holster and put it down on the ground and kick it across to him, he doesn't really care about getting a Glock scratched up on the pavement. So I'll put the gun on the ground, but since I don't own any Glocks, I'm not going to kick it towards that officer. You know, I'm going to nudge it gently towards him until he decides to come and pick it up. But what I love about the LC9S is the recoil springs, while they are not specialized for somebody with hand or wrist troubles, it isn't that hard to work that slide. And if push comes to shove, I have a great device by gunsmith Chris McCanich of Iowa called the Handy Racker. And the Handy Racker fits on the front of your slide, right over your front sight, and it allows you a better grip to actuate that slide. So you could dump an entire magazine just by working that slide with the Handy Racker. But I'm getting off track here. The Ruger LC9S, I feel, now that it's below $300, is a budget-priced compact 9mm without budget features. It has a very good safety. It has a good magazine release. The magazines are top-notch. They're made by Mikar. The ones that aren't made by Ruger in the U.S. are made by Mikar. And that's the 9mm extended magazine, is made in Italy. Very good magazine springs. And it just fits in the web and the palm of your hand very well. Now, that's not to say that the shield is not a good gun. It is. And if you look at that segment of the market, you have over 2 million shields sold across all the models, and you have over a million LC9s and LC9Ss sold. So a lot of people are picking up to the compact, almost pocket size, or if you have large pockets, pocket-sized 9mm, as well as the subcompact 9s and 380s. And we'll talk more about some of the 9s first. You've got the Glock 43. You've got the Kimber Micro 9, and we can't forget the SIG 938. The SIG P938, and I recently got to shoot one for the first time. A good friend of mine, one of my shooting buddies, has one. And that's now his EDC, his deep concealment gun. And he's got a really, really nice custom inside the waistband. It's a hybrid. It's a Kydex outer and a leather inner. And very, very strong belt clips. And he's enjoying carrying the gun that he purchased about 4 months ago now. And he's first getting the opportunity to carry it. So we went out shooting this past week, and a bunch of us. And we're all members of the same Oath Keeper group that I run locally here in my area. And we're starting our little shooting, group shooting, you can't call it a therapy session, but we have a spot out in the desert, in the national forest. We get about 100 yards, and then it goes up to a red rock spire, so we have a lot of backdrop and no lead splatter or rock splatter. And we enjoyed being out there just the past couple of days ago. And it's always important to get out and shoot at least once a month, preferably more often than that. If you could do it twice a month or three times a month, that's really good. Get out there and do it. Get out there and get shooting with your everyday carry gun. And that's really, really important, because you could shoot your double stacks and your 1911s all you want, but that's not the gun you carry all the time. And if it is, good for you. But if you're shooting a big gun and carrying a smaller gun, maybe you should practice with the smaller gun also. I try to put 75 to 100 rounds through at least one of my EDCs every time I go out, because I want to feel the recoil from the self-defense ammo. Because ball ammo, let's face it, you got a little bit of a kick, but it's not what you're going to carry every day. You're going to carry hollow points every day, okay? And that's going to recoil on you a little bit more than that ball ammo. So you've got to get your hands and your wrists used to feeling that recoil and getting back on target for the next shot. And we practice with a lot of steel, but we also get on some cardboard and paper for groupings. And we do that at 5, 7, 10, and 12 yards. And then we go 10, 15, and 25 with the steel. And that's where that's basically the way we get out there in the desert and shoot. We do also go to an indoor range locally here, and that's 25 yards or whatever you choose at a lesser distance. And of course, most people do that standing up at the line. I'm able to roll my walker up to the line and sit down on that and shoot from there. It's a little more comfortable on my broken back. So getting to the shield again, I have the Performance Center ported version in 9mm, and I love the neon front sight and the fact that they're interchangeable between a red pipe and a green one. I use the green one. Green's just better on my eyes. And although rear sights are great, I just follow the old Colonel Jeff Cooper. You know, you put your eye on the front sight and forget about everything else. And once you could see, your target and the front sight is on your target, you're good to go. You're good to go. Now, again, the only difference between the shield and the Ruger is, the Shield is 7 or 8 rounds, and the Ruger is 7 or 9 rounds. And that 9-round magazine is actually a grip extension on the outside, whereas the smaller 7-rounders have finger grooves or a flat butt plate. And on all my 7s, I have the finger grooves, because the flat butt plate makes no sense to me. My pinky will just hang down, and, you know, I won't be able to support a good grip with only 3 fingers around the grip panels on the gun. And this is why I don't really carry a smaller gun. I'm not really a 380 fan. The Ruger LCP and LCP2 are phenomenal guns, and not long ago I got to shoot an LCP2, brand new LCP2. Guy had 3 6-round magazines, and he had an extended 8-rounder, and very, very interesting little gun. But you have to remember, the less body of the firearm, even with a 380, the more recoil you're going to have. For many years, people bought and shot the original LCP. The LCP2 has a number of improvements. I also want to mention the Remington RM380, and we'll get to some of the other 9mm and 380s later. But the Remington RM380 is taking the industry, I wouldn't say by storm, but since it's come out, they've sold somewhere north of 100,000 units. That's not too bad for a starter gun, but for a company like Remington, you'd like to see them get a few more units out into the retail channel, into the stream. We don't see that. The 9mm Remington, the R51, has been re-engineered, and there are a lot of people buying the newly re-released model. I haven't had my chance to get my hands on one yet. Two guns that I have shot, the Glock 42 and the, which is in 380, and the 9mm Glock 43. Now again, I'm not a Glock fan. I've mentioned that. It just doesn't do it for me, but they are reliable guns. And I have a good friend who I hope will be working with me at the upcoming SHOT Show, who carries a 43 daily. And, you know, when you can draw and shoot 5 rounds from a gun and reholster, and your groups are all within 2 inches, you're doing something right. And I think that's very important, to be able to find a gun that you're comfortable with, be able to practice with it, and keep it on target. And you have to be continually, successfully, even on every one of your draw strokes and with that gun, and then you are doing well. So, in the remaining minutes that we have, I want to talk about a few other compact guns. Obviously, the Smith & Wesson M&P 9C. They've recently re-released that, the M&P Compact 2.0 in 9 and 40. So, you've got the 9C and the 40C. 2.0, and they've done some different things with the grip. I have an original 9C, but the newer model, and it's the same barrel length, 3.5 inches, so your holsters will fit. If you have an M&P 9C or an M&P 40C holster, the new version of the gun will fit in your original holster, so no worries on that. I find any magazine of 10 or more rounds, or we'll say 9 plus 1's right on the border, but anything 9 rounds in the magazine or more is going to help you win the fight if you have to engage in that fight. Now, I will tell you, I will be the first person, especially if I am out with my wife, we're going to hit the hills. We'll draw our guns. She carries a snub-nose 357 stainless. We'll draw our guns and we'll make sure that we can get to safety, and others who we care about who are around us with us can get to safety before we take any kind of responsive action. It's just not going to happen. We're not going to rush into, or shall I say, suffer fools gladly, rush into something headlong without preparedness and without securing anybody else who may be with us. And I find that to be a good, solid tactic, okay? And I watch, I'm one who watches a lot of content that I record on the various outdoor networks, the Outdoor Channel and the Sportsman Channel, which is one of their, which is their affiliate, and the independent channel called the Pursuit Channel. There are a lot of great shows on all three of those channels that you could avail yourself of, as well as DVDs. But those things do not substitute live training. And if you're going to carry a gun, even a deep concealment everyday carry gun, a compact gun or a subcompact gun every day, you must get some training. That training is highly important. Even if you only get out and take a class once a year or once every 18 months, get out there and do it. Get out there and do it. Okay? Even if it's a three-hour class, doesn't have to be a whole day class, could be a three-hour class, that live training is invaluable. And live shooting under the guise of an instructor is valuable. Sure, it's great to go out, like we go out in the desert, and we have our targets, and we set our targets up, and we shoot. And we have targets that we stagger in order, and we do a walkthrough, so to speak, where we go through those and shoot those targets. And it's timed, but it's timed more as a training aid than it is to be fast. It's not about being fast. It's about being accurate. So, yes, you want to get your rounds off in a timely manner, but you also want to be accurate, and you want every round to hit. If you're shooting steel, you want every round to hit steel. If you're shooting cardboard, you want those rounds to be placed in a good group and together. So in the remaining minutes that I have, I want to go through, again, the various firearms in this group. You've got the Kimber Micro. You've got the... and there are a couple different models of the Micro. You've got the SIG P938. You've also got the SIG P238, which is the 380 version of the 938. Also, very reliable little pocket-sized gun. Now, that doesn't mean to say you can't carry it in a holster. My friend that has his 938, as I mentioned a few moments ago, has a leather Kydex hybrid holster he carries his in, and he's been practicing his draw 50 times a day since obtaining the holster a few weeks ago. So that's the only way you're going to break yourself in and condition muscle memory, hand reflexes, and your muscle hand-to-eye coordination with your gun. Now, of course, my LC9S is a little larger than that 938, but the extra weight and size of the gun, I feel, helps absorb the recoil better. So I want to suggest to all of you to go out and try out a pocket-sized gun or a subcompact gun. get comfortable with one and get one into your repertoire, into your arsenal, into your armory, however you want to pronounce it. And in the few minutes, again, that I said that we have left, I want to once again thank Bob for letting me sit in for him while he's on his little break. And hopefully it's not too little of a break. He said 6 weeks. I hope he doesn't change that. And I want to remind you about all the great shows on the Self Defense Radio Network. Ours included, Firearms Chat. We record every Thursday, and I edit it every Sunday and get it posted to you. Since I don't have to watch any NFL football anymore, because these, I don't want to call them, they have a right. I don't want to call them names because they have a right to protest any way they want. I'm just not comfortable or happy with them doing it on during my national anthem and on my flag, but that doesn't mean they can't protest, and they're allowed to do that if they so choose. So I've rambled a little bit here. I hope I filled up the allotted time, the 30 minutes that Bob wanted, and I want to implore you to go out. If you don't have a compact or subcompact gun in your possession, in your ownership, go out and get one and get a bunch of ammo, 400, 500, 600 rounds. Practice with most of it and save some of it. Make sure you have some self-defense ammo for it. Shoot a little bit of that and save the rest. But practice with the ball ammo. And if you're a 9mm, try a lot of different ammunition until you find the one that works for you. If you're at 380, you have less choices, but still there are some good choices out there. And the 380 and 9mm ammo have really caught up to the other calibers. Maybe not so much the 380. 380 is probably caught up to 9, but the other calibers, you know, the 9 is caught up to the 40 and the 45 in self-defense ammo, I hope. It seems to be. And with that, if you would like to check out our show, you go to iTunes and just search for Firearms Chat, and you should be able to find us. You could also find us at libsyn.com/firearmschat. That's where our podcast is hosted for our website, firearmschat.com, which is down right now. But by the time you hear this, we'll most likely be back up again. So let me give you that URL one more time. It's www.firearmschat.com. And with that, I'm going to be using another one of my little trademarks. I'm going to be OUT out.
Dr. Bill, thank you. Excellent material about small guns, especially the small Ruger pistols. We appreciate you sharing your thoughts and your experiences with us. Check out his show, The Firearms Chat Podcast, firearmschat.com. Also, the Firearms Chat Podcast is on iTunes and all of the other podcast players, and a member of the Self Defense Radio Network. And by the way, if my podcast here, if what I do, if my efforts help you, can you consider supporting me? A lot of you use my Amazon store. Thank you very much. I'm an Amazon affiliate, so whenever you do your Amazon shopping, please go to handgunworld.com first. Click on my Amazon store and do that every time you make a purchase. It's a couple of extra steps, yes, I know, but you're going to be supporting my show, and you're going to be helping me out. You don't have to spend any extra money. If you want to watch great video content that doesn't take the place of training, but really gives you some good ideas that you can go to the range and start practicing, check out the Shooters Club at shootersclubmembers.com. Ben Branham and I, we do custom videos exclusively for our Shooters Club members. You can't get this content that we put out anywhere else. It's only $8 a month or $75 a year to join. Now, let's hear from Andrew Branca, who is bringing us the case of the week, the self-defense case of the week.
Greetings, Handgun World Podcast, and thanks for having me on to share the Law of Self-Defense case of the week. I'm attorney Andrew Branca. This content is provided for general educational purposes only. It does not constitute legal advice. If you are in need of legal advice, you must consult with competent legal counsel licensed to practice in the relevant jurisdiction. This case of the week, State v. Brunner, comes to us from the Missouri Supreme Court in a decision handed down January 16th, just a few days before this was recorded. This is a murder case in which the defendant, Brunner, would raise the legal defense of self-defense to justify his killing of the victim, and naturally would ask that the jury receive a jury instruction on self-defense. Getting that self-defense jury instruction is really important to the defense because it tells the jury that not only must the prosecution prove the defendant guilty of the crime beyond a reasonable doubt, they must also find that the prosecution has disproved self-defense beyond a reasonable doubt. At trial, however, the judge refused to give the self-defense jury instruction to the jury on the basis that the defendant had failed to meet his burden of production on self-defense. The burden of production has to do with the fact that you're not automatically entitled to claim self-defense or argue self-defense at trial or get a jury instruction on self-defense. Self-defense is made up of five elements, up to five elements. They're cumulative, meaning they're all required. Those elements are, of course, innocence, imminence, proportionality, avoidance, and reasonableness. And because they're cumulative, if anyone is missing, then whatever your use of force was, as a matter of law, it simply can't qualify as self-defense. And an element is missing when there's literally zero evidence in support of that element. If there's zero evidence in support of any one element, your use of force cannot have been self-defense as a legal matter. And if it couldn't have been self-defense, there's no point to giving the jury a self-defense jury instruction. In this case, the judge concluded that there was literally zero evidence that the victim who was killed here presented an imminent deadly force threat to the defendant at the time of the killing. So there was literally zero evidence on two of the required elements, imminence and proportionality. Without those two elements, self-defense can't exist as a simple matter of legal logic, and there's no point to the self-defense jury instruction. And importantly, this conclusion is inevitable in this case, even if we look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the defendant, even if we believe his version of the facts is the true version. Even the defendant's own testimony still provides zero evidence on the elements of imminence and proportionality, and thus self-defense cannot exist here as a matter of law. Now, the facts in this case, according to the defendant's testimony, believing him to be telling the truth, are as follows. He was estranged from his wife. In fact, he'd been separated from his wife many times over the course of their 25-year marriage because the wife was prone to having affairs. But the couple had always reconciled in the past, and he assumed they would do so again this time. On the evening in question, however, the defendant learned from Facebook that his wife was apparently on a date at a local movie theater, a theater from which the defendant had only just picked up his 14-year-old daughter who'd been there with friends. The defendant drove his daughter home, grabbed two loaded handguns and an extra clip, that's what the Supreme Court called it, and drove back to the movie theater. At the theater, he approached his wife and her date, who would ultimately be the victim, as they exited the theater. As the defendant attempted to speak with his estranged wife, the victim placed himself between the defendant and his wife. The victim then repeatedly took steps toward the defendant, and the defendant repeatedly stepped back. The defendant testified, the victim adopted a fighting stance, that the victim told the defendant, "I'll have your throat slit in 2 hours," and that the victim told the defendant, "You don't know who the F you're messing with." At this point, the point of the shooting, the defendant's testimony becomes confused. But the defendant did not contest the testimony of witnesses on the scene or the medical examiner. The medical examiner would testify the defendant fired 7 rounds and 6 of these struck the victim. In order for the defendant to have been justified in using deadly defensive force, it was necessary that he had a reasonable apprehension that the victim was attempting to cause the defendant's imminent death or grave bodily injury. But here there was, even by the defendant's own testimony, zero evidence that the victim presented such a threat at the moment the defendant shot him. Now, the victim may well have presented a threat of a barehanded blow, a punch, but that constitutes only a non-deadly force threat, absent some aggravating factor not present here. There was zero evidence that the victim possessed any weapon of his own that could constitute a deadly force threat to the defendant. In addition, although the victim might have threatened to use deadly force against the defendant, I'll have your throat slit, the threat was not of imminent deadly force about to be used right now, but of future speculative deadly force in 2 hours, given that even the defendant's version of the facts provided zero evidence of an imminent threat of death or grave bodily harm, self-defense simply could not exist as a matter of law. There was nothing for the jury to consider with respect to self-defense, and thus the trial judge concluded there was no reason to give the jury a self-defense instruction. The jury, with self-defense having been taken off the table, not there for their consideration, convicted the defendant of first-degree murder. The defendant appealed his conviction to the appellate courts, where his conviction was affirmed, and then to the Missouri Supreme Court, which just days ago also agreed with the trial court's analysis. It was correct not to give the self-defense jury instruction when required elements had zero supporting evidence, and they affirmed the conviction. Now, I always encourage people to read these court decisions in full, because that provides the broadest context and the greatest opportunity for learning the law of self-defense. For those of you who would like to do that, you can head over to the Law of Self-Defense Patreon page at patreon.com/lawofselfdefense. There you'll find this week's case of the week freely accessible until we deliver the next case of the week. And you'll see a link to the full text of this court decision. It's worth the read, and it even has a dissenting opinion, which is always interesting and educational. That's it for our case of the week. Keep in mind, the Handgun World podcast audience can always get 10% off everything at lawofselfdefense.com simply by pointing your browser to lawofselfdefense.com/handgunworld. Or by using the discount code HandgunWorld at checkout. And either way, a small part of your purchase will come right back to the Handgun World podcast. Until next time, I'm attorney Andrew Branca for lawofselfdefense.com.
Thank you, Andrew. You know, I just got his book. He just sent me, in full disclosure, he sent me a complimentary copy of the 3rd edition of the Law of Self-Defense, and he signed it, customized it for me. Wow, that's cool. Thank you, Andrew. Good stuff. You know, we need to remember that we have to know self-defense law as well. It's not just as simple as carrying a gun, and then if the stink happens, you have to use the gun and defend you and your family. Well, guess what? There is always going to be an aftermath, and it's always going to be looked at from the perspective of how well did you know the laws of self-defense for your area and for your particular situation. I met Andrew last year in March of 2017 at the Rangemaster Tactical Conference. He was giving seminars there, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And so, yes, I'm an affiliate of the Law of Self-Defense. So please, if you go over there, lawofselfdefense.com/HandgunWorld, please use my affiliate link, and that also is another way that you can support the show and at the same time benefit from Andrew's material. Okay, for this episode's Common Sense, Modern Survival, and Prepping segment, I got a few short things to say here. Let's talk about vehicles. Do you have a vehicle that is conducive for bugging out if you have to? Now, I'm not a tinfoil hatter. I don't go tinfoil hat on you. Keep this rooted in common sense. One of the reasons why, when I was in the need of a new Handgun World mobile studio, one of the reasons I got a Toyota 4Runner, and even though it's not four-wheel drive, it has excellent ground clearance, and I got a version with the V8 in it, so it's got plenty of power in case I have to pull things, in case I have to haul things. You know, in a stink hit the fan situation where we might find ourselves having to rebuild, having to carry supplies, having to drive or traverse terrain that's full of rocks and ditches and holes and all kinds of stuff. That's why I got a vehicle with a lot of ground clearance. I would not be able to do stuff like that with the old Honda Accord that used to be the Handgun World Mobile Studio. So the next time I buy a new vehicle, not a new vehicle, I buy vehicles used, pay cash for them, and buy them good shape, and I buy them used, it'll probably be a four-wheel drive Toyota 4Runner or some kind of a four-wheel drive vehicle. Because I think for getting out of Dodge, that's probably the best. So do you have something like that? My sister just bought an old pickup, a really old Ford pickup. And that's just kind of a good bug out vehicle if she's got to get out. She lives in Tennessee. So I was proud of her because, you know, she's thinking it's a second vehicle. I'm sure it's pretty old. Looks like it's in pretty good shape. I'm sure she paid cash for it because that's kind of the way most people in our family, that's kind of the way we roll. We don't like credit. I've talked before last week. I was talking about how debt and credit is the enemy. The borrower is slave to the lender. That's in the Bible. So I'm sure my sister got a nice bug out vehicle. Do you have one like that? You may want to consider getting one. Keep it within your budget. Keep it reasonable. You know, make it something you can pay cash for, but not only just as a bug out vehicle, but just a general purpose vehicle. You may find that to be quite useful. So if my son and I, if we got to get out of here, if there's some kind of a disaster, we're loading up the 4Runner and we're going. And I got it set up to where I can store a lot of stuff in that. So if you got a vehicle similar to that, make your plans and know how you're going to use that vehicle and what you're going to pack it with. Have things ready to go that you can toss in there and sustain yourself for several days if you need to. Okay, folks, remember, I am looking for sponsors. I'd like to bring on one, maybe two more sponsors for the Handgun World podcast. Again, I've got to be able to use the product or it's got, you know, you got to be able to send me a sample of it. Let me use it and test it at least for a few weeks and, you know, put my stamp of approval on it that it's something that I like and that I would use. And then I would feel comfortable advertising your product. Let me know. I have limited space available. I don't want to have too many sponsors, but if you're interested, send me an email. My email address is handgunworld@gmail.com. If you have not rated this show on iTunes, a lot of you have. If you go to my feed, you'll see I got a lot of iTunes reviews. But if you haven't, I would love it if you would, because that's how people find good podcasts. That's how they find good content. It's how they decide how and if they want to listen. Is a lot of it's based on the reviews. Come on, we're all like that, right? We like to read reviews of things. So go to iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play. Leave a review for me, however you, in whatever method you use to listen to this podcast. Finally, I want to conclude this episode by thanking all of you. Here's why I'm thanking you. I am very close to a total of 5 million downloads. The Handgun World podcast has almost 5 million downloads. I'm very close. I'm like about 30,000 downloads away from it. So thank you very much. It was one of my goals. You know, when I hit a million, I thought, hey, maybe I can get to 5 million. And I would love it if it would come before I get to my 450th episode. This is 447. So tell a friend, tell a relative, tell somebody that you know that you think could benefit from this show. Tell them how to find it. Word of mouth helps, and I very much appreciate that. Folks, thanks for listening. I appreciate it. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop Remember, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. Shoot straight, shoot safe, and I'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.